Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Route. It's Easter week 2024 with a little blizzard happening at my house. Join us. We join to have the discussion between food producers and food consumers every day, Monday through Friday. And every Monday, it's Hank Vogler checking in with the latest in how wonderful it is to work with the Department of Labor and keep people employed tending to sheep. How's Hank Vogler?
Just fine. Just fine. Going to the airport to pick up some boys.
Before we get to that, I really enjoyed that conversation last week with your fellow mate from down under. That was really good.
Yeah, those are good people. And that's what's so disheartening is here the American sheep industry and the beef industry with other imports and all the things that are going on in the world. The producers on there, they're no different than us. They have all the same kind of issues and everything, the same hopes, aspirations, trying to make a better product. I mean, the advancement. He took time with me, and we went out and looked at the sheep, and he'd point to an individual sheep. He said, now here's that one's the right one. This one over here, you see the tips of the wool there. I mean, he's on spot on. Mike.
Oh, Tom, that's good. He got out of there after our conversation. I thought you made him mad. He loaded up his wife and left.
No, they had to get to the airport. So anyhow, fun, fun, fun.
You know, we don't do that as much as we used to. Just stop by and go look at whether it be sheep or cattle. I mean, I can remember in the early 90s, I'd just go out on a tour and go look at people's cattle and look at different genetics on a regular basis. We don't have time for that anymore. Why is that?
The clock is spinning faster. That's just the way everything is. You know, it's just go, go, go and get nowhere. You know, I don't know.
Don't you have a granddaughter that's a fantastic singer?
She's been to Nashville two or three times, yes.
I can see her next song if she wants to write it. I'll help her write it. They just go, go, go and get no.
That's about it.
All right. So you're at the airport. You're going to the airport. What do you got going on?
Well, it's time for the crew to come back. You used to be able to get guys up here for 3 years, then 18 months. Now it's 10 months, or you have to re-up all their papers. And so several of the crew goes home, which saves me some money because in the off season, they're not supposed to do anything except herd. Not supposed to pick up a hammer or nail or anything, just herd. So they went home, so I started bringing them back. First group cost $500 per ticket to Las Vegas, and then 5 hours ride to the house. Second batch of tickets were $700 a week later. Then, for whatever reason, they were not informed that they were supposed to be at the airport in Lima to get on, and they live 9 hours away from Lima. So they weren't even notified they were supposed to get on. So two of them didn't get on. One just by accident got on and got him home last week. So this week,
Whoa, down here. How do you by accident get on a plane?
Well, I happened to have called in to the coordinator in Peru about another subject.
Oh.
And she said, and told him about it. And of course, he didn't know the other two guys were coming or who they were or anything about them. So he just by accident happened to make a phone call. So now I got two tickets, $700 a piece. They fined me to reuse those tickets, the 700 plus I had to give 400 more. So that was $1,100 per ticket. Oh, by the way, when Dennis did get to the airport, they canceled the flight from United. He had to go on Aeromexico, and they lost his luggage.
it's
just one travesty after another. Well, then, so now I'm into those two tickets, $1,100. So the third guy, because I can haul three, at a time in case we get bad weather, keep their stuff inside the vehicle. So I had to pay $900 for his tickets. So just the tickets alone have gone up $200 a week in the last 3 weeks. And that's not including the surcharge for the boys not making it.
I've ridden with you when the weather's bad, and you keep a shovel in your pickup for a good reason. And I have a video of you digging your own pickup out while I watch you take a picture.
I see. Okay, well, you can use that when they have the congressional investigation for the amoeba that I mashed with my shovel. It's now on the endangered species list.
No doubt that's coming. White Pine County Commissioner suspected of ruining amoeba's habitat.
Yes.
With a shovel.
Yes. Bashed their little heads.
Disrupted all their tunnels. Hey, did you catch that worm full moon last night? It was actually this morning at 3 a.m. Central Time.
I was probably dreaming of fat lambs and a long staple wool at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, what's the idea of the worm moon? That you could see worms in the moon?
So I figured, and Kelly looked this up before I did, that I figured the worm moon was all about the spring and the thaw and the, you know, how important the earthworms are to soil health and aerobic activity in the soil and the topsoil and things. It has nothing to do with the soil. There is a worm in the wood that actually starts, it's like been dormant all winter, I guess, and it's starting to work. And so it's bringing the tree to life.
Oh. I thought it had something to do with the false spring.
Yeah.
We always have a warm up and then it gets cold again because we had snow yesterday, our complimentary 1 inch, but it was still snow.
We have predicted a blizzard all day. We're having snow up to 8 inches until noon. And then 40-mile-an-hour winds throughout the course of the day, and snow starting again at 4 o'clock Central Time.
Wow.
So spring has left, winter is back, and TV stations all across the planet are calling me because, once again, I predicted this would happen. I didn't predict anything. I just followed Grandpa's logic that we had massive fog days 90 days ago, and you're going to get some major precipitation events 90 days after that fog. And I just had a feeling and a sense that this was going to be, and I said it before, we will have snow until May 1. I truly believe that.
All right. And what happened to the old adage that early Easter, early spring? Easter's the 31st of March. That's early Easter.
Yeah, except March came in like a lamb.
At your house, it blew the bark off the trees at my house.
Well, then your worms are struggling on where to go get this whole rejuvenation of the tree going, because they reside in the bark.
Those dirty little buggers never been to White Pine County, I'll tell you that. It snows every month, or freezes anyhow.
Yeah, no, we came in like a gorgeous lamb in March, so you had to have known it was going to leave like a lion.
Yeah. One time they had a late May storm, long time ago, must have been, I think, in the 70s, up in North South Dakota, Eastern Montana, Wyoming. They had like 3 feet of snow in May, right during, and they were prairie lambing too. It really knocked a hole in the lamb crop that year.
That was back when we had lambs in the Dakotas.
Yes, I guess that's right. But anyhow, yeah. It was devastating. So when one of the volcanoes blew up, they had the summer without sun. They had freezes and ponds freezing over in July, all kinds of things. So I guess that was global warming, cooling, climate change.
Well, it's happening all now in Iceland. You know, that tornado, that volcano that started erupting in December, like the 14th. They say it's still spewing soot into the atmosphere.
Well, and there's another one by Iwo Jima that's under the ocean that's bubbling up. That goes on all the time. There's a lot of more volcanoes out there than you can imagine
That's
that are
climate
active.
change. That's because you, Hank Vogler, think you got to tend to sheep and cattle with all of those flatulence. We'll be back. That was a joke for those that might be driving through wondering what the heck did I just say. We're back with more Roll Route, Hank Vogler, after this. Let's talk about pest management. In this case, I'm talking about Apache sprayers and how Simpson Farm Enterprises leads the way in innovation. Really what Simpson does is brings the innovation, the reliability of the Apache sprayer, and then if you have issues, the service is second to none. Simpson Farm Enterprises. Get more information about anywhere in the Great Plains of America, particularly from Nebraska South, at SimpsonFarm.com. SimpsonFarm.com. Welcome back. Hank Vogler, Roll Route, Trent Luce, kicking off onto a wintry Easter week. Jesus rode a donkey into Jerusalem. The donkey's pretty prevalent in the Bible.
Donkeys and sheep. Yep.
Donkeys and sheep.
Yeah. Camels too, I'd guess. What's one of the parables that's easier for a
camel to pass through the eye of a needle?
Eye of a needle than a rich man to heaven.
Yeah, I didn't understand that when I was a kid. I now understand it completely.
Poor old Donnie, he's having all his troubles today.
I'll let you say what you want here, but I'll just remind you, speaking of my weather forecast, when they actually announced that he is leaving New York, you might want to know where your bunker's at. That's to me, that's the sign to the world it's time. Because I believe he's in on it. But go ahead.
Well, the only thing I could say about it is in a very small way, the Constitution is supposed to protect the people from the government, not the other way around. And in my little small way, my whole issue, the $300,000 it's cost me to protect myself, is kind of in the same vein. Overbearing government. BLM made a mistake. They did not do their due diligence. So rather than step up and say, doggone it, we messed up, they took the ostrich position, stuck their head in the sand, and then a powerful organization called Southern Nevada Water Authority came along, and they feared them more than they did me. So they let them destroy or try and destroy 50 years of dirty hard work and sacrifice to put something together. Now, I'm not saying that Mr. Trump sacrificed the same way and all of those things, but nonetheless, this is what our government has become. They're spying on us. They're telling us what our kids must do in school. All these different programs are for complete control. And if that includes Mr. Trump leaving the New York City, then that's what it does. But I don't think he's leaving New York City at this point in time on his own. I already thought he already lived at Mar-a-Lago or someplace like that in Florida.
Yeah, but my point is that when they announce that his business interest, he's had enough. He can't take it anymore. He's just got to exit all of his business interests and liquidate in New York. You know, it's predicted that New York will be the first target. And when he leaves, that's the signal of the world. It's time to come. But to your point, you've been dealing with this. You and every small business owner has been dealing with this kind of government intrusion and hurdle. It's much worse than a hurdle. And nobody cares. Nobody says, hey, our food producers are in peril. Our food producers are being unfairly targeted. this guy, he gets a limelight and does whatever he does. And everybody's like, oh, my goodness, look what the government's doing to him. What about what the government's done to Hank Booker? What about the government's done to Dustin Kittle, who's going to join me live today, who they came in and took his farm away? How many families have been destroyed because of government intrusion and nobody paid attention till now?
Yeah, well.
And they're still not talking about Hank Vogler. They're only talking about, oh, look what this guy, they're doing to him in New York City. That doesn't affect you long term. What happens to Hank Vogler affects everybody long term.
Well, and look what they're doing with, it doesn't matter what it is, Endangered Species Act. Boom, boom, boom. They can find that rare and endangered amoeba in your snowbank. I mean, anywhere. They could shut you down. National Environmental Policy Act. The EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, Waters of the United States. All of these things give more control, not to the people, it gives more control to the central government. You know, just think about it. Since the dawn of time, and I'll put the dawn of time when we started creating surplus agriculture. And before that, we were hunter-gatherers. But when we started producing surplus agricultural products to where we could trade goods and services for that food, so you had time to invent a language, invent a wheel, invent better things for society. That was the beginning of agriculture. But it was also the beginning, if you fall into the trap of climate change and all these other methane gas mm-hmm. coming from livestock, all these other things, well, they immediately, to have surplus agriculture, they had to start diverting water out of creeks, whether it was the Nile or whatever, or the Tigris and the Euphrates. They started figuring out how to put water in a channel, run that channel down to a field, run it down corrugates or across the field, flood irrigate, whatever they did. But all those things were done to produce surplus agricultural products. So in that respect, it is your fault. It's your fault for making it better for people and yourself. And then over the years, it has eroded into this thing that, oh, every step you take, you're killing some amoeba. So, yeah, it's just nuts. Absolutely insane.
So, you know, I've been digging into this quite a bit, Hank. In the last 100 years, there are two decades which are considered to be roaring, booming economies. And that would be the Roaring 20s and the Reagan era of 80s. Would you disagree with that?
Not at all.
Okay. And that if you look at what was happening on farms and ranches in the 20s and the 80s, it is clearly the toughest time. I'm going to exclude the Dust Bowl from environmental reasons, but from an economic standpoint, I mean, Calvin Coolidge was a one-term president because he continued to veto two times, 27 and 28. He vetoed a package to give farmers subsidies. Calvin Coolidge said, if you give the farmer a subsidy, it will empower the bureaucracy and make it tougher for a farmer to continue to farm. And we had a major exodus of farmers in the 20s. And then in 33, we passed this Agricultural Adjustment Act, which gave certain farmers, picking winners and losers, big subsidies. And that was ruled unconstitutional in 37. And then during the 80s, everybody thinks about how big the economy was. And yet the farm crisis of the 80s, we're still paying the price for. It restructured agriculture and farming from a banking relationship and everything. And I knew that is really how you blossomed you into what you're doing today. But the 20s and the 80s were devastating to agriculture.
Absolutely. After the First World War, they had all that war machinery that they turned into tractors. So immediately they had huge surpluses because they didn't need horses. But that's what my granddad, you know, the old timers, they were old timers at the time, but this would have been in the 60s. They'd come to visit and they'd always, yeah, boy, those 30s, they were tough. My grandpa go, wait a minute. The 20s were tough. Every time you turned around, there was a surplus. There was too much. We burned the wheat in the stove after we got it going because we couldn't afford to buy wood, things like that. He said, 30s, there was parity. It was the drought that hurt you in the 30s. But you could buy a wiener pig and sell it as a fat hog and make money. It wasn't much, but you could make money.
Excuse me. In the 30s or 20s, they called them shoats, not wiener pigs.
Well, I was pretty small in the 20s and 30s, so I didn't remember that.
Nobody talks about shoats anymore. And when I was a kid, we still raised shoats. Now we raise wiener pigs.
Yeah. But anyhow, that was, as far as he was concerned, the drought of the 30s was the tough part. But the 20s, he said, there was a dirty son of a gun. He said every time the market would start to go up a little bit, it just crashed down. People were walking away from the farms. It was just horrible.
So, well, if you, we talk a lot about, well, I do on Across the Pond with Andrew every morning, the riots, not riots, the protest, which the farmers are bringing to France and Spain and Germany and Wales. But if you study what the farmers were doing in terms of riots, they were rioting in the 20s. And Iowa was the hotbed. And the number of farm foreclosures in farm country in the 20s is unparalleled.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet. Well, I just remember I you know, graduated from college. I had the sum total of all knowledge of the world, proud as a peacock, walked into a bank. The line was across the street of people borrowing money to get into agriculture and different products, and they were going to raise crops, and they were coming out of the Willamette Valley. They were selling their farms. This is the irony. They were selling their farms in the Willamette Valley for housing developments and wanting to buy ranches and properties in Eastern Oregon. And I'd step up and I'd say, well, I'd like to buy this 160 acres. Where's your portfolio?
Hold on. I'll ask for your portfolio and we get back with the second half. We're all right. Greg Hager and his country roots will bring this nation back to boots. And I believe that is when things will get better. His songs get us there now. Christian and country roots. GregHager.com. Check it out today. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Hank Vogler, who has just been asked for his portfolio because he wants to buy a big spread, a whole quarter section.
Yeah, didn't get her done either. So anyhow, about 1981 or 82, somewhere in there, I went into the Fairly Honest Blackburn's office in the back. They always had a bottle of whiskey back there, having a pretty good, you know, him, the guy that run the liquor store was right next door. And they were waiting for the pitch game to start at the Elks Club. So if you come in the afternoon, well, anyhow, he had a sign in his window. It said, "They'll never make another acre, Will Rogers." So I come in with the same 160 acre. I had an earnest money agreement already put down, everything taken care of, about a third of what they were trying to sell the same property for 4 years prior. I took that sign out of the back, out of the window, and went into the back room. Secretary's laid off. There's nobody in there but him. And he's sitting back there. And I said, well, you know, this reminds me back in the 60s when all the kids started growing their hair long and quit wearing shoes. The guy that had the shoe store and the guy that cut hair sat around and drank whiskey. And I handed him that sign. He says, give me that. He tore it up, threw it on the floor. And I bought the 160 acres for cash. But, yeah. But there wasn't nobody in the line in the 80s. No, sir. It's money hauling. Let's make a deal.
Well, the 80s changed everything from the future of farming because the banking industry, to its own accord, went tits up. And then required, before you borrow money, you have a contract. We're going to know where your revenue supply is before we loan you any money. And that contract demand from the banking industry has changed agriculture into a specialization instead of the diversification that we once had. And that ultimately leads to what we have today.
Yeah. Some banks just absolutely sat you down and said, we're not going to deal with you anymore. We suggest you try the PCA or whatever, but we're shutting out the portfolios on ag loans. And they did. I mean, you know, they're probably some real well-heeled guys, but for anybody trying to get into business, boy, they had nothing for you. So, yes, well, sir.
But they loaned a high percentage of the farmland value on the farm and then charged an 18% interest rate. Number one, how did anybody buying land think that this was going to work? And number two, why did they go along with it?
Because in my view, my granddad had bought the Island Ranch in 1945. I believe, if I remember my history, $3 an acre for the land that had adjudicated water rights, $1.50 an acre for the somewhat better ground, and 50 cents an acre for the tough ground. And it was all, and that was in 1945. Well, there was a steady increase. Land, believe it or not, is a commodity. You watch those land prices. They go up for years and years and years. They're kind of the last vestige of investment, better than gold, better than anything else. So by the time the 70s came along, we had all this inflation. And I remember Standard Oil was going all over Grandpa's ranch looking for oil. And they had these machines anyhow. They tore the dikes up. But, well, my grandpa says, did they find any oil? He says, yeah, there's oil down there. And I think oil, they'd gone crazy. Because it had gone from $1.50 a barrel to $3 a barrel. Don't quote me on that, but it was something in that area. And the guy says it'd take $100 a barrel oil to go after it. And everybody just broke out laughing.
Right.
But nobody considered what was happening. The land was inflating. Everybody was wanting to get into land as a hedge against inflation. And then the culmination of that was 10 years later when... Yeah, federal land bank loan, 17.89. Bank loan for revolving line of credit, 23%. I know, I was there, I seen it, I did it, it didn't work. They came to close me out, and I talked them into letting me go 1 year, and they did. It turned around, and I was all right. But again, it wasn't because I was making any money. It's just because the banker, I don't know, decided there was something there, I guess, because he we go. But that was what was going on. Well, then it crashed. Farmland crashed. Well, now here we are going again. It's skyrocketing. Commodity prices are coming down. People are getting the willies. Other things. Now it's more fun to be, you know, the markets are going up, 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 up. So if I were a betting man, no matter who gets to be the next president, there's going to be some come to Jesus. I'm afraid we just threw another $1 trillion worth of fake paper on the fire.
So yesterday. In the 80s, there was CRP, Conservation Reserve Program. Government signed up. That started in the 70s. And so at that point, you didn't control everything you did with your property for that period of time, which I believe is the early ones were 7-year contracts. Now there's 10, maybe even 15-year contracts.
Yeah.
But for the most part, people owned their property and had property rights. The difference between then and now, as I see it, is that because of the tough economic challenge, people are searching for something else to bring in as a revenue supply, which is, oh, you know, the solar developer is wanting to pay me X amount to use the land to do this. And well, maybe that'll keep us competitive against our neighbors and we can continue to own this land and go forward. The problem is that you have the BlackRocks of the world who are now figuring out how to create this national asset company. And if you've ever signed a conservation easement or a wind easement or a solar easement or any type of control to somebody else, somebody is going to be controlling your land other than you, and they're going to start trading us on the New York Stock Exchange. It's the new era of controlling land without paying the mortgage or the taxes.
Well, and then you become just like a Russian babushka peasant. You know, you buy and trade or sell, or the government gives you the land, the peons go with it.
Yeah.
That's about what it amounts to. Yeah, he becomes slave. Yep.
I mean, history tells us the Bolsheviks, they raised their hand. They said, I'll go work for you for nothing, because they were afraid to take on the establishment. And so they were willing to continue to be peasants. Well, we're doing the same thing. I'll take your little payment. I'll take your payment and give you the opportunity. You said it, Hank, where everybody rushed to California in 1849 to get a little bit of gold out of the soil. And land is a better investment than gold at any point in time. And you have the leverage, and you're giving the leverage to somebody else by signing your property rights away to somebody for a payment. Back in the saloon days, they called that prostitution.
You ought to see the map of Nevada, the projects that they have.
I have.
We are this sort of wilderness as far as Washington, D.C. is concerned, and a great place to put in the wind and solar and all these projects and run their power lines through and everything like that to get to the cities, take our water from out from underneath us, do all of these things. Because we're collateral damage. You know, back in the MX days when Carter was going to put all those missiles on those underground trains and move them all the time. Okay, that would have been great maybe for national security. But if you're the Russian guy with the missile in front of you and you want to stop the train, you don't necessarily have to hit the nuclear bomb. But if you knock a hole in the ground and stop the train, so that would have made everybody in White Pine County, Nevada, collateral damage. Well, that's what they're doing now. They want to put, 1,500 acres of solar panels around the airport. What's that all about? If you have a solar panel made in China, could they, in one corner of it, have some sort of a spy device? I don't know how strategic.
Absolutely, they do.
It is, but they're doing it at all these airports. Not just Ely, you know, all of these things are done with some sort of a long-term plan. And when you look at it, then you look at 70,000 acres of wind towers. And then all of a sudden, California Technical Institute has decided south of me on the neighbor's winter range is the best place in the world to gaze at the stars. So they're putting in these, I don't know, dishes or like a satellite dish or something. And I said, well, you know, that's pretty good winter range. You go in there, it'll all come back to Halogeton. Well, yeah, but we got to save money. Huh? You can't go find a scabby piece of ground somewhere to do that that doesn't contribute very much to the economy. You got to use the best piece of dirt in the whole area because you're trying to save money. You're slitting this guy's ranch, destroying it, in the name of saving yourself a few bucks, and it's a $1 billion project.
Yeah.
Wow.
Imagine going to your BLM office in Ely and telling them you're going to do this with this range, this winter range, because it'll save you a little money. Imagine what they'd tell you.
Get out of here and don't come back. Don't let the screen door hit you in the backside. Yeah. And nail two boards together and put them out on the desert. The FB and I would be there the next day to throw you in the jug. Yep. I mean, yeah, that's how it works.
So in the last minute
but
of
the
this
whole
segment,
state of Nevada.
Yeah. The whole state of Nevada, the whole country is under this. And taxpayers are funding a subsidized energy system that is not reliable, will not supply the electricity we need. Meanwhile, while you, the taxpayer, are paying for this infrastructure building, you're giving control to a few investment bankers around the world to tell us what we're going to do with this property that we have at your expense. You and me, the taxpayer. Roll Route, Hank Bogler, last segment right after this. Let's talk about beef. You know, 74% of the world's landmass is not suitable for growing a crop, but it will feed an animal. Hank, it could be a sheep, but in fact, it's mostly cattle. Ruminant animals upcycle cellulose material into the most nutrient-dense food substance on the planet. And in the Great Plains of America, based in Nebraska, but extending to Missouri, to Colorado, to Kansas, all the way to North Dakota, the certified Piedmontese system continues to provide what it is that people need in terms of upcycled protein. Nutrient-dense food substances, nothing parallels beef. Oh, there's some kind of as good, but nothing better. Details about the most tender beef you can find on the planet and the best news of the day. You don't need to go to the store, particularly on days like this. We just have it delivered to your door. CPBeef.com. Remember, these are all cattlemen, your neighbors in the Great Plains of America, working at producing the most tender beef you can find. CPBeef.com. Every calf is tested. That's how I can make that statement. Welcome back. Roll Route, Hank Vogler. Kelly said we have one package of lamb. I don't know why I only have one package of lamb. I guess I like it that much and I eat it. Well, I butcher a lamb a year, Hank. So just so you know, it will not be Easter ham. Oh, I got to correct myself. Apparently, I have a daughter who wants ham at Easter. So we're going to have brisket, ham, and lamb if you want to come by.
All right. That's a compromise. I'm pragmatic enough that as long as you have some lamb on that table, we're all right. You know, here's a perfect example of what every American who ever took civics or who ever studied what he was supposed to do in about the sixth to the eighth grade, that it's we the people, by, for, and of the people. Several years ago, in the name of national defense, Morton Thiokol, I believe was the company, got a 30,000-acre parcel of ground out north of Las Vegas along the highway going back towards Ely. Just old, scabby desert country, but it was going to test these rockets. And there was a spring out there called Coyote Springs. The way it was set up is as soon as that was over with, this testing of rockets, the land was to revert back to the BLM, which is actually supposedly administering the state lands in Nevada, the same as they are in the other lands. The BLM, if you want to, you know, go to the Supreme Court, spend a couple of million dollars and maybe get the wrong decision. This is not federal land. It's state land, but it's administered by the BLM. The reason the BLM, or at that time, the land office wound up with it, because they didn't think it would create enough revenue. It was the poorer and poorer stuff. Of course, the BLM over the years has weaseled their way around, even on the, what is it, the Red River between Oklahoma and Texas, and saying that's their land. I mean, just all these kind of things. That's all right. Let's go back. 30,000 acres. Supposed to go back to the government. Well, all of a sudden, this gentleman by the name of Harvey Whittemore, with borrowed money, wound up with it. And he paid, the rumor was $20 million or something like that for this 30,000 acres. His best friend, Senator Harry Reid, somehow magic had happened. Well, then he turned around and sold half of the water rights out of Coyote Springs to Las Vegas, Southern Nevada Water Authority. Well, come to find out, the 30,000 acre feet of water in that spring turned out to be about 8,000 acre feet of water, and all connected with all the water around the whole country. Now some gentlemen that own it are in a, you know, a blood, they were going to build a community out there like 150,000 people. They were going to have the high-speed train was going to turn around out there. It's about an hour, not even that far out of Vegas, maybe an hour, and build an entire community out there, still desert and everything like that.
Because there's a plentiful supply of water that people will need? Is that's the reason for the
community? That was part of it, and plus the fact Las Vegas Valley is just about full. I mean, wall to wall, houses, warehouses, everything. They're starting to build outside of that valley. They're moving over towards Pahrump in Big Sandy Valley, which Paw is water, and is in Shoshone is rock water, I guess you'd say it in American, or whoever's, I guess they'd be more American than you and me here completely. But anyhow, that's going to affect their water because water still runs downhill, I believe. I mean, there's just everywhere you look, there's a water fight. But the powerful, just, I mean, like a snow pile cleaning off a road for a metaphor that's happening in Nebraska right now. The little guy just wiped out, and that was not the way that Constitution was put together to do. It was put, everybody was supposed to be equal under the eyes of that law, and we are not. And we have traded our freedom for security, and we are neither free nor secure. I think Ben Franklin said that in a different way a long time ago. That's what's going on.
And the state that you left continues to trip over itself to try to eliminate small business, because now Oregon has an initiative that will literally put all small farmers out of business.
Yep. And they did wise up, though. I guess they passed a law that the hard drugs are now going to be relisted as illegal again. Oh, boy. Talk about locking the barn door after somebody steals your horse.
This drug thing is such a bigger problem than anybody recognizes. I know people who are beginning to see the true impact of the drug scenario, the total. I mean, when I learned, was it last fall, somebody said that there is enough. I was at a meeting where a county sheriff spoke, and he said it's now estimated that there's enough fentanyl in the United States that came in illegally that it would 30 times over kill every American, 31 times kill every American if it was consumed. 31 times.
And that's just like, it's really hard for old duffs like me. I remember when marijuana, the strength of it, I mean, them guys would light us one of them up, and there'd be six of them sitting at the table playing cards, eating berry pie and ice cream. And by the time it got around to the last guy, he'd eat the butt end of it, and they'd have another one lit, and they'd have to do three or four of them to get giggly. Well, just because farmers, you can't let farmers make money, because they'll figure out how to make more money. They'll figure out how to make it stronger, how to make it easier to transport, how to make more leaves per acre, whatever. They'll figure it out. That's just the normal human instincts. If I could make more money, if I could improve this, and I guess they got it now. They got people with psychosis. They got all kinds. It is not the same marijuana. But for old people like me that was around when that was started and made a decision when it took a barrel of that to smoke a bunch of people at a party up, now one or two joints, everybody in the place is goofier than a bed bug. Well, that's I made my choice a very, very long time ago. I bought one bag of that one, and I didn't smoke, so I poured it. I took the tobacco out of cigarettes, menthol to boot, and I think I made 2.5 or 3.5 packages of that of cigarettes with that in it. I give them away. I think I might have smoked one or two or three, and I thought, nah, this ain't right. This ain't right. So bye-bye.
How goofy is a bed bug?
Well, I suppose it depends on if he's smoking the old type marijuana or the new type marijuana. I don't know. But I mean, it's just absolutely, they made it powerful. Well, now it has to change the minds. And now these other drugs, now they have this fentanyl, which is totally these synthetics that I guess you don't even have to ingest it. You can put some of that on a doorknob if you want to get somebody, and just it'll go through your skin. All kinds of nasty, nasty stuff. So I don't know. But
well, I know someone who's a registered dietitian in a hospital who started working in the neonatal division. There's going to be a pretty big education coming there. What's happening with the drugs and how it affects these babies? Oh my God.
Oh boy.
Oh,
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, and they're them little babies born hooked on cocaine and different things. Just, it's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
And it is, but again, there's another problem with human nature. Whether when the first bunch of cavemen came along and picked a bunch of grapes and put them in a container and they fermented, and they escaped for a few minutes. It changed their outlook on life for a few minutes, and there's always, for tens of thousands of years since the first making of beer or whatever, people wanting to have a quick fix, and some people could take it, some couldn't. The Native Americans, when they came here, had no ability with alcohol, but they had other hallucinogenic drugs out here in the West. They had peyote, different places. They had, in South America, they had cocaine. They had all sorts of escapes, and some people took care of it, and some didn't. And maybe that's just Darwin's theory of evolution. I don't know. Don't they have drug problems in Europe and everywhere else in the world where they, where these drugs are available?
You know, they have to, but I don't have the data on that. I'm going to find that for tomorrow's Across the Pond. That's a great idea.
In some countries, if they even catch you with it, they just kill you.
Yeah.
So evidently, that's probably not a good place to
that
go.
That seems like a deterrent.
Party. Yeah, would be with me.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can deal with that. Thanks.
Okay, so we have 1 minute left. This is your last bits of wisdom before Easter. Why is it with all of these sheep throughout the course of the Bible? I mean, it was about sheep and a few cows. The United States of America is created, it's developed, and it's not sheep that's a predominant animal, it's cows. Where did the sheep man mess up?
Just complacency, apathy, didn't have to do anything. They were, sheep was king. People didn't have refrigeration. They could consume that lamb, you know. And then now, and like Sunday dinner was chicken. Beef was something that you ate when things were going good. Yeah, you hamburger or stew meat, but a T-bone steak was a pretty rare commodity, you know. And sheep are like the crabs. You only have them for one day. After that, they got you. So.
And that'll do it. We have successful. I mean, there's just nowhere to go with that other than have a great Easter, Hank. And get all your men here. And have a little money left over to buy some lamb with it. We've successfully journeyed down the path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Hank Boger, I'm Trent Luce. Both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route. Nitric oxide is not only just a healthy element, it is essential. We essential need nitric oxide in our life. I take a Lozenges every single morning. 18 and a half years, that's the way I wake up. While my coffee is brewing on the stove, I got the nitric oxide tablet doing its thing. Its base is beet powder. And nitric oxide is a must for cardiovascular, mental, and overall health. Dr. Nathan Bryan has full details. Go to the website. If you've not been there, there is a plethora of information there about healthy living, and it's no2u.com. N-O, just like no, N-O, number two, letter U.com. If you go watch a few of his videos, you're going to want to get on the same program that I'm on. Trent is your coupon code to make that happen.